Inconceivable!
Will you please act like you have more than a two-word vocabulary?
Is there air? You don't know!
And now, a yak.
Yak?
Hey, don't touch that dial. You found Secular Yakking.
I'm Robert.
And I'm Amy.
After years.
Many years of yakking at each other.
We're here to yak at you.
So sit back and enjoy the yakking.
Welcome back, everybody. Hope you had a wonderful weekend.
Some did and some didn't.
All right.
Oh, and our daughter, Carrie, is here today.
All right.
You she can introduce say her. Hi.
Hi. There hi, everyone.
That's a little better. Anyways, we should probably get on with the show.
That would be great. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so we do have some Twitterers this week. More than last week.
Okie dokie.
So we have Bobby, John Rampton, Peruska Cude. I don't know.
Apologize if you're butchering it.
Yeah, I'm probably butchering that one. And this next one, I'm not sure either. Bibop G. Gresta. That's as close as I can get.
Uh-huh.
Nice try.
Yeah. M.A. Lewis and Gary O'Neill. I can do that one.
Well, that one's fairly easy.
Yeah.
But that's cool that we have more than last week, and he does truly apologize if he's butchering any names.
I apologize which every single why, week, whether I butcher your name or not.
Right, which is why you read it and not me, because I would butcher it so much worse.
Anyway, you can follow us too. Anybody know where?
Secular Yakking?
At Secular Yakking. How many times
I always forget the at part.
That's what happens when you don't Twitterer.
Yeah.
Older adults.
Yeah. So, Carrie.
Yes?
What did you do last week?
I went to camp.
Camp what?
Camp Quest Northwest.
Awesome. Do you want to give us a little rundown of what you did?
Oh, there is too much. There is too much greatness at that camp. It's the best place.
Like what? Who was there?
like all of my counselors that I like love to death. Okay. And one of my most favorite people ever is Shelly Siegel. Like, she was there, and it was the best thing ever. She taught me how to, like, start writing songs and little hints about playing guitar. So that was super, super cool.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yep.
Now, normally, though, what's the regular stuff you do at camp? Because obviously you don't normally do the guitar aspect of it or the singing aspect of it.
Well, I mean, so there's this talent show that we do on Thursday for the week. Everyone gets to, like, pitch in, and whoever doesn't just gets to sit and watch whoever decides to do a talent. Like, this year we had a girl who drew blindfolded. That was cool.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, it was. They were pretty good, to be honest. Not gonna lie. Shelly and a bunch of other counselors got to sing. One of them, or a couple of us, sung with her, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Even I sung with her and one of my good friends there. So that was super cool.
That's kind of big for you. You're on the shy side, so.
I know. Me and my friend and Shelly sung I'm Yours by
Jason Mraz?
Yeah, that's the one.
That's what I'm here for.
Thanks. we also did skits with our little baby cabins. Like, since the LTs get their own little younger cabin that they do skits with, and since I'm an LT and a bunch of other people, kids are.
Which LT is leadership in training?
Leadership track.
Leadership track, yep. Okay.
So we did skits with our baby cabin, and then skits with the LTs. The LTs literally had 1 hour to do the skit before the talent show. Or not talent show, but the skit thing. So
the skit show?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Short and simple. Let's go.
Yeah, sorry. But yeah, they said that the LT skit was the best skit ever in the history of camp.
Now what did you do?
So our LT counselor, she told us to try and elaborate what LTs do during camp.
To the younger kids, right?
Yeah, to the younger cabin campers and stuff. And we did so amazingly well that all of the LT counselors cried and laughed at the same time. It was beautiful.
Yeah. You were telling us about that song. It sounds really cool. I tell you what we're going to do. After we record this part of the show, we'll get you and your sister in here and have you guys sing it. And we'll add it to the end of the show if anybody wants to listen to it.
OMG.
I'll do it.
Okay. Wait, really?
Yeah.
I'm so surprised.
Make sure you listen all the way to the end. And you'll hear Carrie and Kelly, hopefully, singing their rendition of Imagine.
And since they're identical twins, it's going to sound like stereo.
All right.
Yeah.
So that's cool. So we'll get into that a bit later.
Yeah, that's like a whole nother thing.
I mean, I have more that went on at camp.
Well, I know, but we're only a 30-minute show. So what else did you guys do?
We did canoeing. Okay. We did archery. We did rock climbing. We did some bracelet making. We talked about evolution at times.
Did you guys do Socrates Cafe this year?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's one of my favorite parts.
Yeah, I love the Socrates Cafe.
I wasn't paying attention, and they asked me, and I was like, what? And I said, what, really loud? You're like, whoa, calm down. It was
like
funny.
Like in school.
Yeah.
But yeah. No, you guys also, I heard the counselors got to go on one of the nights and see the bioluminescence in the water, the algae or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
It was really cool. You didn't get
she?
To hear about
no,
that.
No one told us that.
Your older sister, who's a counselor, she got to do that. They got to go because one of the counselors is a marine biologist and he loves his work. And at nighttime, there was an algae bloom that was out there that when you stir it up creates a bioluminescence, and it was amazing. I heard.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the other time, during one of the days, me and the LTs were gonna do the polar bear plunge in the middle of the night. That's when you like jump into the cold water in the middle of the night where it's really, really cold. So, but we forgot to get up.
So you just slept through it?
Yep.
That makes perfect sense.
All right. Well, I think we need to get on with the show. There's a lot of fun things that you do at camp, but you could talk forever.
Yeah.
This is only a 30-minute show.
Or 45 or whatever.
Well, I was going to say, I think this one might be a little longer.
Anyway.
My bad.
That's fine.
Hi, I'm Dina, writer and creator of secularscarlet.wordpress.com blog. With a passion for archaeology and humanities, you can find many subjects addressed, including atheism, religion, women's issues around the world, and articles hitting our news. Come on over and check out what is on my mind this week.
Fine. I have a cool-ish story.
Okay.
Boy.
A rabbi says no to 5-year-old girls on bikes.
What?
Huh?
Yeah, I thought the same thing when I read it. The rabbi of the Jerusalem neighborhood, Nahalat, I don't know, has raised eyebrows among much of the Haredi public after issuing a ban on girls aged 5 and up riding bicycles because it's immodest. The rabbi stated, according to Gannett, I think that's how it said, that young girls riding bikes cause serious damage to their modesty.
Excuse you? What do you mean to their modesty?
Let me continue.
How?
In his ruling, which was distributed in synagogues throughout the neighborhood, he claimed that bicycle seats cause young girls to sit in a way which could be provocative.
Oh, my God.
How else do you sit on a bike?
That's why they're saying don't ride a bike at all after the age of 5, which is, holy crap, those people are creepy.
But that's when you learn to ride a bike.
Well, you're not supposed to ride a bike, apparently.
After the age of 5, because apparently adult men are looking at little girls after the age of 5 riding a bike and thinking some nasty thoughts. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. He said, we inform parents that they are obligated to prevent their daughters from the age 5 and up from acting in this illegitimate way. Yeah.
That says so much and for so many reasons.
Yeah. So that tells me a whole lot about his thoughts.
Well, that's exactly where I'm thinking. I mean, only someone who thinks that comes up with this kind of an idea for a rule.
Right.
Not to mention, as Carrie said, you really start to learn to ride bikes around 5 without, you know, just
training wheels.
Sometimes you take off a training wheel. Sometimes you're just getting started. But either way, I mean, That's just insane.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the, I mean, it's different in a way, but it's like school clothing. What is it called?
Being too pro or something?
No, like the regular term for it.
Uniform?
Uniform.
In a way.
So the dress code?
Dress code, that's yeah. it.
I got a word.
Yeah. Yay, 1 point for you.
Anyways.
It's like that, to where it's like they're telling girls that it's like, it'll distract boys if you, like, show your bra strap. Like, it's not.
If you wear your skirts too short and things like that.
So instead of telling the boys to get over it, they make the girls.
Or boys learn to control yourself. There's an idea.
Yeah, that's what I meant by get over
it. I mean, I've never met any of my guy friends who just, like, yeah, I get distracted at bra straps all the time. I can't focus. I've never met a single boy that does that. I mean, maybe they're hiding it, but
your father's giving me this look. I'm like, I know exactly what he's thinking. They're hiding it.
Yeah
but
faking that.
Which is what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
That's called controlling. That's, you don't have to act on whatever thoughts are in your head, you know? But either way, back to the topic here, because we're totally getting off.
Well, it's kind of the same thing, though.
Yes, it is. But, I mean, come on. We're talking a bike. It's not like you can side-saddle it. I mean...
No, they're not designed that way.
No, and it's just absurd, first of all, that they're looking at young, little girls. I mean, little girls. They're just out of the toddler stage, basically. Exactly.
There's nowhere near hitting the age of puberty at all. Well, so there's no, like...
Even when they hit puberty, it doesn't matter. They're still little girls.
They're still little girls. But, I mean, just the fact that a grown adult is looking at little girls and he wants to make this law, because obviously those are the thoughts that go through his head. Yeah.
So he wants to regulate himself instead of... He wants to regulate little girls instead of regulating himself.
Yeah, again, that really pisses me off. The damn victim syndrome, by the way, or whatever that thing is, where punish the girl who gets something done to her and not the person who did the duty, you know? I mean, that runs right through me.
Yeah.
Anyways, next subject, because this is making me mad.
This one won't make you as mad.
Sure, it won't.
Court rules Marines' religious rights were not violated.
Right? Say what?
In a 4-1 ruling, the U.S. Court of Appeals of Armed Forces upheld a lower court determination that Lance Corporal Monifa Sterling's religious rights were not violated when a superior ordered her to take down signs containing a biblical passage that she had posted on her desk at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. Would you like some history?
Okay, and a little shortening of what I just listened to.
Okay, so Lance Corporal Sterling had put up a religious statement on her desk,
right,
which said, "No weapon formed against me shall prosper," which is a biblical verse, or a paraphrasing of a biblical
right,
verse.
Right,
well,
yeah.
Well, it's against Marine policy to have religious statements
right
at your desk.
Right.
So she was told several times to take them down. She put them back up several times.
Okay.
Eventually, they went to the court martial. She was stripped of her rank. She was dishonorably discharged. Or disobeying.
Well, I was going to say, I don't think it was about the fact of what it's not just, I should say, about what was on her. It's the fact of the action she did to go with it.
That's the whole point.
It's not the statement. It's her action on continuously going against what she was told to do.
Right. But if you listen to the religious right on this, it's all about her religious freedom.
Of course. It's persecution again.
Right. Because they don't understand the military rules. It says you can't do that.
Well, and regardless, even if it's not in the military's aspect of it and you put it in a whole nother place, you know, but the rule stated you can't do this and you continuously go against what you're not allowed to be doing. And let's say you get fired for it or what have you, you know, you kept going against what you are supposed to be doing. And out of spite, because I can't think of another word besides spite.
Yeah, like, I mean, she kept doing the same thing when they told her not to do it. Like,
that's a reason for court martial.
I mean, even young people understand that you don't keep going against basically what your boss tells you to stop doing.
Especially when you're a Marine.
And then be surprised that you're going to get reprimanded for it.
Right. Because you think it's your religious freedom. People need to learn when you're a government official, you don't have the same religious freedom.
Privately, yes, but when you're at work, no.
No, you don't.
When you're in uniform, no, you don't.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't it like Albert Einstein, I think. I don't know, maybe not. But that said that if you keep doing the same thing, that's like psychotic. It's not it's gonna
insanity. Insanity, hun.
It's, yeah,
I'm not sure who said it, but I don't think it was Einstein.
I don't think that was Albert Einstein here.
I don't know. It's one of the famous people. I forget.
It's all Einstein.
But yeah, she shouldn't be surprised. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and she's probably going to take it up to the Supreme Court.
Of course she will.
I mean, this was the Federal Court of Appeals. Well, it was the Armed Force Court of Appeals. And the only place she can go now, I think, is the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll try and keep up with that. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, but it doesn't surprise me. They're all crying persecution for the religion, blah, blah, blah. As far as I see, this has very little to do with religion and more of to do with behavioral
Uniform
problems.
Uniform Code of Military Justice. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
All righty.
All right, so I've got something that will make you kind of happy.
Happy or pissed?
It's not necessarily a good thing, but it's a good thing.
Okay, fine.
You ready?
Fine.
So confused.
Tony Perkins, head of the rapidly anti-gay Family Research Council, once claimed floods, such as the one that followed Hurricane Katrina in 2005, are God's punishment for moral decay. By moral decay, they typically mean abortion or homosexuality.
And that's the cause for hurricanes?
Yes.
That's particularly Hurricane Katrina?
Well, any sort of natural disaster.
Oh,
earthquakes,
okay.
Tornadoes, it's all because of the gays. That's what they say.
Yeah, the gays did it.
Yeah, it's all because of the gays.
Just nuts. Anyway.
How?
Because it's God's wrath.
Because they exist?
Because they're going against God's will, and God is punishing everybody.
He's bringing his hand down.
Like Sodom and Gomorrah, right? That's kind of what they're thinking.
Yeah, the wrath of God because you're sinning, basically.
Well, if you've been anywhere near a news outlet for the past couple of weeks, you know that the flooding in Louisiana is really heavy.
Yeah, it's been very bad.
Well, guess where Tony Perkins lives?
In the middle of it.
In Louisiana.
I told you.
And I guess there must have been a ton of gayness going on there. Because holy crap, that's a big flood. It's a 1,000-year flood.
Yeah, it's like over the roofs.
Yeah. It turns out Tony Perkins' house was destroyed.
In the flood?
In the flood.
Sad.
Now, I don't relish anyone's house being destroyed, right? Because that's a horrible thing.
Yeah,
but
you lose everything.
I do like when irony strikes.
Yeah.
That's definitely was ironic.
So, nice. Well, not exactly ironic. That's not quite the right word, but that's what I'm going with.
Well,
anyway.
I was going to say, it's kind of, ironic's the only thing that I can think of right now, but.
It's Alanis Morissette style.
Yeah,
ironic.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
It's not really ironic.
Because he says this and then this exact thing happens to him.
It makes me wonder, is he right?
Which in case would make him gay.
Well,
or is he wrong? He's not gay. And his statement was false from before, and he'll have to correct himself.
So, in my experience, the most anti-gay people turn out to be gay.
Yeah.
The ones that fight it the hardest.
Yeah.
They tend, not always, but they tend to be closeted.
Yes.
But, I look at it as a loss either way for him because either A, he was incorrect with his first statement on hurricanes are caused by gays or just natural disasters, or B, it happened to him because he is. So either way, it's a loss for him.
Yeah. Well, there is good news.
Uh-huh.
The Foundation Beyond Belief and their Humanist Disaster Recovery Team are taking donations to help out flood victims.
Right.
According to their website, over 40,000 homes were damaged by what officials have said in some the worst flooding to ever hit the state.
Jeez. I know a few people had died from this even.
I saw was like 15 or 16.
Was it that many? Yeah there were, it's really bad flooding down there. But they're also below sea level, too.
Yeah, I think in some of those areas they're not. It's
no,
just so
that's
much
just,
water.
Yeah.
I mean, they dumped like 20 inches of rain in 72 hours.
It was raining like crazy. Yeah.
Unprecedented.
With nowhere to go and saturated grounds.
Yeah.
But either way, hopefully, you know, the waters will recede. And I heard that, you know, people are saying we'll rebuild and
yeah.
And
well,
whatnot.
They rebuilt after Katrina. They're going to rebuild after this. It's what we do with
that's
humans.
I was going to say we do this after every natural disaster,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which has nothing to do with anything.
So speaking of natural disasters, that is a perfect
segue
into Tom's segment. And it's time for another Yak from the Past. Tom's back with us to enlighten us on something else new. And also this week, in addition to Tom, we have Carrie joining us on Yak from the Past.
Hi, everyone.
Hello. So, I'm going to dive right into it, and with my book of the week, of course. So, my book of the week this week is, I'm being a little bit self-serving, but that's fine.
That's okay. That's what we do here.
Yeah. My book of the week is Adam and Eve Questioning the Historicity of Biblical Human Origins by Matthew O'Neill, who is a colleague of mine over at Danthropology. And I am the one who wrote the foreword to the book.
Well, that is cool.
Yeah, and it's just using the historical method to kind of look at the creation story in Genesis in kind of its own context, not as a literal story, but as a cultural narrative. So head over to Amazon and pick that up. It's actually, it's only $1 right now to get on Kindle. It's like a special price right now, so you can snatch it up real quick for cheap.
Cool. I will put that in the show notes. It sounds very interesting.
And it's a short book. It's only about 60 pages or so. Okay. So it's a quick read. But it's interesting and raises some interesting questions about how to think about things historically. And like I said, I wrote the foreword, so you know it's awesome.
It's got to be.
It sounds awesome.
It must be.
So what do you have for us tonight?
So I'm doing something a little bit different, and we'll see how it works. If it tanks, we'll go back to the old way I do things. But
all right.
So today's actually a really interesting day in history, today being Wednesday, August 24th, when the podcast comes out. Today is actually the 23rd, but we record in advance.
Yeah, secrets out.
Secrets out. Boy. Shocker, people. So I'm going to break with my usual form of discussing politics and religion in America and talk about something a little bit different. I'm going to kind of discuss how we connect with the past using history and historical documents.
All right.
So, as most people probably know, history is the study of written documents. Without writing and narrative, there is no history to be uncovered and preserved. So, especially important to the study of history are primary source documents, which are first-hand accounts of events. These can be ancient histories, court papers, or letters, etc. Anything that's basically an eyewitness kind of testimony, but on paper. And today happens to be an excellent day to show how history can illuminate and humanize the past. So today, August 24th, in the year 79, Mount Vesuvius erupted.
Well, that was a surprise.
Oh,
I bet it was for the Romans as well. Burying the cities of Pompeii in Herculaneum. The most listeners are probably familiar with Pompeii, which is one of the most important archaeological sites for the study of the first century Roman Empire.
And if I remember, a pretty awesome movie.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw the movie.
Oh, you should.
I watched it.
I don't really watch movies or watch TV. I'm weird like that.
That's all right. We'll let you buy it this time. How do you get all our social references on the show then?
I don't.
That makes perfect sense now.
Yes. So the ash that covered Pompeii and Herculaneum preserved the city so well that in some places you can still find graffiti on the walls and food on the counter in shops. And of course, researchers in the 19th century famously discovered that the victims of Mount Vesuvius could still be found under the ash by pouring plaster into cavities in the ash layers.
Yeah, I remember those castings. They're pretty cool looking.
Yeah.
They're pretty cool. They're pretty creepy as well.
Yeah, that's true.
I recently watched a documentary on it. So, yeah, it was really awesome to watch.
Yeah, the creepiest one is the dog. There's a dog that they found, and it's all, like, contorted. That one freaked me out.
Yeah.
Did not see that.
Archaeology aside, the eruption of Vesuvius is interesting from a historical perspective because a letter from Pliny the Younger addressed to Cornelius Tacitus, who was also a famous Roman writer, describing the eruption survives.
Huh.
And it's a pretty cool narrative. So I'm going to do a lot of reading from it. It's just a cool story.
Okay.
So in the letter, Pliny discusses his uncle, Pliny the Elder, who was a younger and an elder, who was commander of the Roman fleet near Pompeii. So according to Pliny the Younger, between 2 and 3 in the afternoon, my mother drew his, meaning Pliny the Elder, his attention to a cloud of unusual size and appearance. He had a sun bath and then a cold bath and was reclining after dinner with his books. He called for his shoes and climbed up to where he could get the best view of the phenomenon. The cloud was rising from a mountain at such a distance we couldn't tell which, but afterward we learned it was Vesuvius. I can best describe its shape by likening it to a pine tree. It rose into the sky on a very long trunk from which spread some branches. I imagine it had been raised by a sudden blast, which when weakened leaving the cloud unsupported so that its own weight caused it to spread sideways.
Huh.
Interesting.
Sounds a lot like a volcano.
It does sound a lot like a volcano. Some of the cloud was white. In other parts, there were dark patches of dirt and ash. The light of it made the scientist, or the sight of it made the scientist and my uncle determined to see it from closer at hand. So Pliny the Elder launched his ships and went to the aid of the people of Pompeii. He was across the bay, while also recording his observations of the eruption. Eventually, Pliny the Elder was killed by the ash cloud that buried the city. So Pliny the Younger describes the scene. They tied pillows on the tops of their heads as protection against the shower of rock. It was daylight now. Elsewhere in the world, but there was dark. But there the darkness was darker and thicker than any night. Sorry, my cat's interrupting me.
That's fine. Cats do that.
He does every time. But if I leave him outside the door, he'll just yell at the door. But they had torches and other lights. They decided to go down to the shore to see from close up if anything was possible by sea. But it remained as rough and uncooperative as before. Resting in the shade of a sail, he drank once or twice from the cold water he had asked for. Then came a smell of sulfur, announcing the flames, and the flames themselves, sending others into a flight, but reviving him. Supported by two small slaves, he stood up and immediately collapsed. As I understood it, his breathing was obstructed by the dust-laden air, and his innards, which were never strong and often blocked or upset, I thought that was funny, simply shut down.
Well, makes me wonder if he had asthma.
Yeah, it's...
That's kind of what it sounds like.
Yes, it does. Yep. Who knows? Maybe. See? Primary sources are cool.
Yes.
When daylight came again 2 days after he died, his body was found untouched, unharmed. In the clothing he had had on, he looked more asleep than dead. So this is a fascinating primary source because it brings to life the drama of the Vesuvius eruption in detail. So the archaeological remains of Pompeii are fascinating, interesting in their own right. But in my opinion, there's something more personal about these written historical accounts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Archaeology would never have been able to give us the details like Pliny the Elder and his crew tying pillows to their heads to protect them from the falling rocks.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You would never see the human side of the loss and devastation that occurred at Pompeii in an emotional sense.
Right.
Historian John Fia said that history teaches us empathy, humility, and selflessness. Primary source materials like Pliny's letter are how history does that. So I'm going to let Pliny the Younger close for me this week with what I think is an excellent example of why studying history and recording our own history is important. And this comes from the letter to Tacitus. You asked me to write you something about the death of my uncle so that the account you transmit to posterity is as reliable as possible. I am grateful to you, for I see that his death will be remembered forever if you treat it in your histories. He perished in a devastation of the loveliest of lands, in a memorable disaster shared by peoples and cities, but this will be a kind of eternal life for him.
Well, that is a very, very, very cool way to end it, though.
Mm-hmm.
I thought so as well, but yeah, I think it really... It gives you something to muse over when it comes to history and really connecting to the past and that kind of emotional connection to the past.
Right. Yeah. I know when I talk history, I try my best to dig into the source documents as much as possible. I mean, I can't always do that.
Right.
So I just have to rely on what the historians have said. So.
Yes. And historians are sometimes guilty of kind of ignoring that. They describe events, but not people.
Right.
And so it becomes easy to forget that these are things that happened to real people, you know. There's rocks falling from the sky and I have to tie a billet on my head to stop myself from being knocked out.
Right.
Interesting stuff there. So muse over that and I will think of something cool to do next week.
Well, that was definitely cool. I hope something just as cool for next week.
Yeah.
All right. Enlightening as usual, Tom.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
I am an old man. Most people hate me, but I don't like them either, so that makes it all even.
And it's time for the Potter Award.
Alrighty.
So this week's Potter Award goes to a nemesis of mine, since we've exchanged pleasantries more than once.
Oh.
Have you?
Yes. That would be Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. The story starts
with Judge Wayne Mack.
Okay.
Who's not our Potter Award winner, but he was definitely in the running.
Oh, okay. Runner up.
Yeah. He thought it would be a great idea to have a Christian prayer in his courtroom.
Now, this is the Pack guy.
Mack,
whatever.
Judge Wayne Mack.
Okay.
Saying that if anyone didn't like it, they were free to leave and that, quote, your case will not be affected.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it would have been.
Yeah.
The chaplain then read from the Bible for 5 minutes.
Oh, my God. Do you know how long it is to listen to someone read for 5 minutes?
Yeah, you listen to me talk here for 5 minutes all the time.
No, I know, but, oh, my, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And they're in a courtroom or in a...
state court. Yeah.
Okay.
A resident complained to the FFRF, and they sent a letter telling the judge just how wrong this action was.
Uh-huh.
Obviously. Right. Enter Ken Paxton. And he wrote a 6-page legal opinion defending the judge's practice of beginning the court with prayer.
What?
Uh-huh. This is the attorney general for Texas. He is the head lawyer for Texas.
God, they're just going off the rails in Texas, aren't they?
Yeah. And he said, nothing in the facts described suggests that the justice of the peace compels or coerces individuals in his courtroom to engage in a religious observance. Accordingly, we believe a justice of the peace's practice of opening daily court proceedings with a prayer by a volunteer chaplain does not violate the Establishment Clause.
Yes, it does.
They can't do that.
Why not?
Because it's the thing. The well,
come on, what is it? I want to hear her say it.
Is it freedom of speech?
Sort of.
It's a little on that side.
Is it
same paragraph?
Yes.
It's the same thing
that we're always constantly fighting for all the time because so many just don't listen to it. Can I help you?
Freedom of religion? Is that it?
Yes. Yeah, that would be close enough. Separation
of church. Well, I'm thinking separation of church and state, which is religion. basically the same thing.
So Sam Grover, an attorney for the Freedom from Religion Foundation, said Paxton's legal opinion was, quote, bending over backwards to find courtroom prayer legal. So here's why it's not legal. In most cases, in a court, you are required to be there.
Right.
You have no choice.
Of course not. No, you don't.
You are a captive audience, and that has been ruled unconstitutional.
Okay, so...
Well, not in this direct instance, but it was why we can't have prayer in school.
Right, captive because audience. They have to be they there, otherwise be it's there. Truancy.
Right.
Same and if thing. You don't show up for court, your ass is going to jail.
Yeah, or a huge fine. Contempt. So that's why that part is wrong.
Right.
All right, and that's why I completely disagree with Ken Paxton, because he's absolutely wrong on this.
Well, obviously, he once again, no. Which one of them is our Potter winner here?
Ken Paxton.
Oh, it is this guy, because I was saying he's like a king in his own castle from the way he's talking.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and I take it we're not done.
Oh, we're
you
not done.
You have that tone.
No, we're not done. In March, Paxton hired Jeff Mateer, who is the Liberty Institute's general counsel, as his top assistant. Assistant Attorney General. The job was not publicly disclosed.
Say what?
So the job for Assistant Attorney General was not put to the public.
Oh, okay.
So Jeff Mateer was the general counsel for Liberty Institute. Just the name Liberty Institute should send off red flags to everybody, right?
Uh-huh.
They're not for Liberty.
They like to hide under that.
Then, in April, he hired Hiram Sasser, a top litigator at the conservative nonprofit law firm, the Liberty Institute, to be his chief of staff.
Oh, well, that's not insider trading.
Yeah. The Liberty Institute is an organization that claims to defend religious freedom for all Americans.
No, they don't.
But after running a search of the cases they have taken, I did not find one where they defended a non-Christian.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's all I ever see them defending. They never have defended a non-Christian.
I mean, all I hear from you guys is all this stuff to where I just, yeah, Mom's right. You never hear anyone else they're defending.
Yeah, because we talk, you know, in the car and at home and stuff, so you're always overhearing the things we say. And
right. Yeah, when you hear
it's like, always one-sided.
Like
that's true.
Previous stories, Family Research Council. Well, no, they're really not.
Yeah.
They're for their family. Liberty Institute. Well, Liberty, Freedom, Patriot. You know, all those are buzzwords for, you know, conservative Christian groups.
Yeah.
They just are.
Yeah.
Whenever I see them, it's like, yeah, okay, you're not really for whatever you're talking about.
Yeah. Not for all.
No.
You guys just talk a lot all of the time. That's why we're on the show.
You've been drinking during the
thing. No.
What the heck are you talking about?
But I'm not done.
No, you never are. You always have it more than two for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Or if not more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Earlier this year, he issued an opinion that Texas could perform its own background checks on Syrian refugees. Above and beyond the federal background checks that are already happening to them.
Again, king of his own castle.
It turns out that Texas cannot restrict refugees from entering Texas once they have passed the federal checks.
Wow.
So, wrong again, Mr. Paxton.
And he's...
He's the head lawyer for Texas.
Does he not read his own law books?
Okay, so I think he's got a hold of the Texas school board books, because they're wrong too.
That's what I was thinking.
I mean, aren't they always the ones that are in, like, the higher up, the more power they have, the more crazier they get?
Sometimes, yes.
Oh, yeah, that big head power
trip. That's why we have the Potter Award.
Yeah.
To point these guys out.
Yes, and he's definitely one of them.
Yes, he is. He actually has followed. The current governor was the previous attorney general.
Oh, uh-huh.
And he was just as bad.
They horrible. All seem to be. Yeah. Have you noticed
that? The Texas attorney general got to be Christian conservative all the way around, apparently.
Yeah, it's like a prerequisite.
Yeah. But I have one more thing.
Okay.
And this is what really put him over the top.
Okay.
In June of 2015, he issued a statement that after the Supreme Court ruling on marriage, right?
Uh-huh.
That said, Friday, the United States Supreme Court again ignored the text and spirit of the Constitution to manufacture a right that simply does not exist. In so doing, the court weakened itself and weakened the rule of law, but did nothing to weaken our resolve to protect religious liberty and return to a democratic self-government in the face of judicial activists attempting to tell us how to live.
Summarize?
So, he was pissed off that gay people get to marry.
Thank you.
Okay, but it's not... Is he gay? Is he marrying a man? Like, it's not...
So, meaning, is it going to bother him?
Is it... Yeah, like, there's no point of it bothering him.
The reason they have issues with it is because it goes against their religious beliefs, even though it's someone else's life.
Right.
It doesn't matter, though.
Well, it does to them.
To them, it does.
Here's why it matters to him. This is what he said in this silly opinion. Court clerks and their employees retain religious freedoms that may allow accommodations to their religious objections to issuing same-sex marriage licenses. The strength of any such claim depends on particular facts of each case. He then called equal marriage a, quote, newly invented federal constitutional right.
Really?
That's a direct quote from his opinion. So, and instead of... So, the way we look at it is people were giving equal rights, right?
Right.
He's looking at it as they're getting now some sort of special
right. Treatment, this new modern version of marriage.
Right.
Can he not read?
I don't think he can. I've read a lot of his opinions on a lot of stuff. I'm thoroughly convinced that he needs to turn his law degree back in.
That bad?
Oh, yeah.
Is it like second grade English?
It's college level stuff, right? Oh. He obviously went to law school, but... You know, he really needs to turn it in because he didn't learn any law.
Well, it doesn't sound like it because he thinks he can just make all these rules all on his own.
Yeah, he certainly shouldn't be dabbling in constitutional law because, no, he knows nothing of it.
Unbelievable.
But the reason he does this is because it allows him to push his religious agenda.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's the main goal.
Right. I mean, it's very frustrating because you can't. Texas is bad enough already.
Yeah.
Got enough issues. Yeah. And now they've got an attorney general that's telling their clerks to ignore the Supreme Court.
Do they have to listen to him?
Because no, they don't.
We're talking the Supreme Court.
No, they don't have to listen to him. It's his. Here's the beautiful thing about Ken Paxton. All his stuff are opinions.
Uh-huh.
They have no legal merit. They're not legally binding. Literally opinions. There, if I went to my lawyer friend and say, hey, what do you think about this? It's exactly the same thing.
Oh, okay.
And what I get tired of, because I see this a lot, people will say, well, the attorney general of Texas said this, so that makes it legal. No, that's not true. That makes it his opinion.
Yeah.
And I saw this a lot in God We Trust, because he actually wrote an opinion on God We Trust saying it was legal, which technically, yes, it's legal, but, you know, that's a whole different story.
Right.
And I keep going to them, and I say, that's his opinion. It's not legally binding. It's not a court case, because they're saying it was in court in Texas because the attorney general said something about it.
Oh, okay.
Not realizing he's not a judge.
Right.
He doesn't issue rulings. He issues opinions.
That's his job.
Yeah.
His job is to defend Texas in court and issue opinions when he's asked for it.
All right. Yeah, but they're supposed to be based on law.
Should be based on law, but they're really based on his religious beliefs.
I was going to say, he's just putting his religious two cents into it.
Exactly.
Yep.
He can't seem to keep those two separate.
No. Separation church state is very important.
Which is very unprofessional, in my opinion.
Oh, I agree.
Definitely.
Anyway, that's why he has won the Potter Award for this week.
He's a good Potter.
Yeah. We haven't had a really good Potter like this in a while.
Yeah, he's a real jerk.
Yeah. And that's all the yakking I got for you this week.
That's it for me.
Me too.
And stick around for the cool song.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Have fun with that.
I'm excited.
All right, we'll see you guys next week.
Imagine there's no free time. At least not for us. Everyone's below us. Above us only Chuck. Imagine all the LTs living sleeplessly. Yoo-hoo. You may say we don't like it, but it's really, really fun. We hope someday you'll join us, and the camp will be as one.
We always like to hear your feedback, so leave us a voicemail at 704-802-YAK or an email at podcast@secularyakking.com.
More input.
All comments are welcome. We like to hear the good, the bad, and the ugly. You also can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google+.
If you like our show, head over to your podcast directory of choice and leave us a 5-star review. If you really like the show, support the show on our Podbean patron page.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
And we'll be back next week with more yakking to please your eardrums.
This show is a member of the Secular Outreach Network, an affiliation of Secular Media Producers. Learn more at secularoutreach.com. Thank you.